This is Movie Hopping. Adam is across the table from me. I'm Nico. We're your hosts. It's our movie show. We do it every week. Movies come out, we see them, and then we come on here and we talk about them. It's been a fun little experiment so far, Adam Hall.
It's been amazing.
It's been a lot of fun. It's
just a delight.
Yes, it has been a highlight of my podcast adventures over the last couple of months talking to you about movies.
Yeah.
And today, I believe we will hit a crescendo in this conversation.
Yeah.
I think I might be more excited for today's show than I was for Dunkirk.
Yeah.
Because, boy oh boy, we're going to dig into a movie that has stirred the pot quite a bit in this cinematic landscape that we have. The month of September was shook. Not by a killer clown. Not by, I don't know, what else came out this month? Ninjas? Ninjas and Legos?
Ninjago.
And Ninja Legos?
Same thing, right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, nothing.
Not by assassins, American assassins. They have not.
Oh, yeah, that was a thing.
Yep, that was not shook by anything. It was a film that we will be discussing later on, and it involves America's sweetheart and her lover. So we'll get there in just a little bit. But this is Movie Hopping. We have a double feature for you today.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about two new releases for the price of one, and one that I think we have not as much to say about as the second, but one that we will discuss nonetheless because it is a very popular movie.
Yeah, sure it is.
Yeah.
It's great. Right?
Kingsman, The Golden Circle.
Yeah.
Adam Hall, talk to me about it.
It's a sequel to Kingsman, The Secret Service, which I enjoy quite a bit, actually. Mm. In fact, you know what? I love the first one.
I love the first one.
I really like the first one.
It was a
pleasant surprise. I thought I was like, I don't love Kick-Ass as much as most people, but I do enjoy it quite a bit.
Okay.
So I guess with coming off of that in mind and everything, I was like, okay, you know, Matthew Vaughn's an interesting director. We'll see what he can do. And yeah, I was thoroughly entertained all the way through Kingsman. It's one of those movies that I'm just talking to myself in the theater. I'm just like, oh my God, I love this movie.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
So I adore Kick-Ass.
Yeah.
And I love X-Men First Class.
Yeah, that's right. I like that movie a lot.
So Matthew Vaughn, for me, has always just hit exactly the right pressure points, has always been someone, and what I love about him is that he doesn't satirize, he pays homage. And that's what he does in Kingsman, and that's what he does in Kick-Ass, because those are two legitimate superhero and spy movies.
In rather mean-spirited ways. But
sure. No, it's vulgar and it's explicit and it's certainly R-rated.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he plays with the conventions, but at the end of the day, Kingsman is a straightforward James Bond-type movie with some dick jokes.
Yeah.
And that's why I love the first one so much, because it's got great action and it's funny and it's enjoyable and the characters are great.
Some surprisingly solid performances.
Yeah.
I had no idea who Taron Egerton was before Kingsman.
Yes.
And I love him.
So I have a thing about Taron Egerton.
Oh, yeah.
Taron Egerton, I get confused with the three other boring white males.
You told me
that
about
lead
this.
These franchises. Have I said this on the show before?
Oh yeah,
yeah. They should like if Hollywood was a college campus, this would be a frat. Taron Egerton, Tom Holland, who's the guy from.
Ansel Elgort.
Ansel Elgort from Baby Driver. we talked about this when we did Baby Driver, didn't we? And Alden Ehrenreich now from Han Solo.
Okay.
And the Hail Caesar movie.
Yeah, I get that.
Yes. So, but he is very good. I think he is among the best of the boring white guys.
Yes, yeah. I agree.
Yeah. And the first one we're talking about, by the way.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, and Sam Jackson's great in the first one, too.
Oh, yeah.
He's a lot of fun.
Giving a lisp that's actually real. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, he apparently that lisp is like something he kind of dug up from himself internally.
Really?
Yeah, because he grew up with a lisp, and the way he learned to overcome it was by saying motherfucker over and over again. True story, bro.
That is the most Sam Jackson story I've ever heard in my life.
It's great. It's amazing. Oh, I love it.
I feel like I'm sitting at a diner with Sam Jackson in the 90s hearing him tell that story.
Yeah.
That's how Sam Jackson that story is.
You know, I always just thought he came out of the womb just screaming motherfucker over and over again. It's just his word. It is his word at this point.
So motherfucker is an anti-lisp word? Is that used in speech therapy? Is that a thing?
Maybe. Tongue twisters are generally used in speech therapy.
Okay.
I used to have a stutter, so.
Really?
Yeah.
How'd you overcome that?
I don't know. It just
went away?
It after a while, I think it just kind of went away. I don't know. I read more.
Because you don't stutter at all.
No, No.
You're actually very well-spoken.
Oh, thank you.
Watch yourself. That's the first and last compliment you're getting out of me today.
Oh, shit. No, I don't know. Maybe I just talk to myself a lot.
The voices in your own head made it go away?
Yeah. Thank God for them voices.
They taught you how to speak.
Yeah, them crazy voices.
Yeah. So Kingsman 2, the Golden Circle. The Golden Circle?
Yes.
I keep wanting to say the Secret Circle. The Golden Circle.
The Golden Circle.
Is the sequel to that film, also directed by Matthew Vaughn, also starring Taron Egerton,
yeah.
Colin Firth, and others. And I found this movie to be very stupid.
I didn't like this movie.
No.
No.
Why didn't we like this movie?
I found it, well, the stupid is...
It's stupid.
Yeah.
It's stupid.
Almost everything about it is kind of stupid.
It's dumb.
And that's saying something with a premise that in and of itself is a little... I mean, it's over the top.
Sure.
But
which the first one was.
But this takes it to... It goes places in certain areas.
It goes places where exactly?
Oh, God.
Bad places? Good places? Highs? Bad lows?
Places. Okay. Very bad places.
Mm.
Yes.
It goes inside some panties at one point. In a vagina, actually.
Yes. We have a great Gaspar Noé shot inside a vagina. Not quite as good as Enter the Void, but, you know, pretty close.
Sure.
And we have... Oh, the president. I cannot...
The president!
This was...
What's that actor's name?
I don't know. What is?
Because he's played the president in like five bad ABC dramas.
Yeah.
I see him like on he's like a TV president, this guy.
Maybe.
I'm sure he was on 24 at one point.
He was in Capote. He played Capote's boyfriend or something. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know his name.
Okay.
But anyway, that plot line was fucking stupid. And little What's the best word I can use for this?
The problem with that whole subplot, there's a lot of problems with this movie, first of all. The problem with that whole idea of a drug dealer is going to hold a country captive, essentially,
yeah,
and threaten a mass genocide through her own drugs, it doesn't take a side on the war of drugs in a very annoying way. I don't know what this movie had to say about drugs exactly.
I don't think it had anything to say about
drugs. No, it had nothing to say.
I think that was just how do we make, or what should be the bad guy's motivations?
Sure.
Drugs?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's make him a drug dealer. And let's insert a line in the first 2 minutes of the movie where Julianne Moore's character's like, it's really tough being a drug dealer in the middle of the jungle.
Oh, man. Wow, it was bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
This movie could have saved itself if it had at least been fun. It's boring. I found it unbearably boring. Really.
Bruce Greenwood is the name of that actor.
Okay.
He was in the Star Trek movies. He was in the National... Oh, you played the President in National Treasure.
Oh, my God.
That's what it was.
That's right.
Yeah. Book of Secrets.
I like the first National Treasure.
I like both the National Treasures.
Yeah.
Sue me.
No, that's fine.
Yeah.
They're great cable movies.
Yeah, no. Oh, yeah. This guy's like a movie president.
Well, good. He looks... Yeah, he so looks like a president.
He does look like a president. I mean, what does a president look like anymore? But, yeah.
That's
a fair point. Yeah, he looks
like... It's actually a very good point.
Yes.
No, I just found this movie to be a snoozer.
So it's 2 hours and 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
Why the fuck is it 2 hours and 20 minutes
long? I don't know.
With
God only knows how many extra characters and subplots that should have been cut.
Oh, my God.
There's... Oh, Channing Tatum.
Why is Channing Tatum in this movie?
Why is Elton John in this movie?
What? Why is Elton John in this movie? Why is Jeff Bridges in this movie?
I don't know.
I thought Channing Tatum, by the advertisements, was poised to be like the next Colin Firth. Right?
And the ending would suggest that.
Yeah, that they've set him up for the third game, which is absurd.
That's not earned even in the slightest.
No. They bring him on. He, like, has a shotgun, and then all of a sudden he's in...
It's a Winchester rifle.
Sorry.
Nico, get your fucking facts straight.
He's got a Winchester rifle. He's doing his old cowboy thing, which is like, you thought that we were English stereotypes in the first one. Now how about some Confederate stereotypes for the second one? that drink whiskey. So fucking annoying. I mean, maybe that's us Americans approaching it from our American angle. Like, it's okay for the James Bond stereotypes to be one-dimensional, but now where we it hits close to home when it's American. That's, but still.
Does that fit into the, maybe not stereotypes, but cliches in movies, I guess? Sure. Yeah, I guess that's what they're focusing on more. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I suppose. But it wasn't funny or insightful or anything.
It's just so comical and not in the right way when they come to the Statesman's whiskey factory and the main silo is the shape of a whiskey bottle. I'm just like, what the fuck is this?
No, they just don't understand anything. They just don't understand anything about... Matthew Vaughn is a British director, correct? Yeah. Oh, yeah, so he just understands nothing about American culture is all it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all it comes
down to. It was dumb. I was like, this is very stupid. This is unbearably stupid. And oh my God. What did you think of the finale of this movie?
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Where they go to the compound and it's all the 50s style.
Oh, sure.
And the meat mincer and
yeah.
the subplot with the guy with the whip who's a villain for some reason.
Oh, right. The guy from Game of Thrones, Prince Oberyn from Game of Thrones.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
is the bad guy.
Oberyn, he's the one who gets his head crushed by the mountain, right?
Correct. Spoiler alert.
Okay, I don't care. We've gone over this. I don't give a shit about Game of Thrones spoilers.
So allow me to wax poetic for a second.
Okay.
I'm going to praise a film that came out this year that I don't believe you've seen, but I love very much and want to take this time to praise it. John Wick 2 is a masterpiece.
Oh, yeah.
John Wick Chapter 2 is a fucking masterpiece, and it's amazing, and all of us need to take the time out of our lives to go see John Wick 2.
Okay.
Here's what that movie does well, and this is where Kingsman fails. They're actually very similar circumstances these two films have been in. Both are successful action movies. Both are visually appealing. Both have very interesting directors at the helm. Both are very silly in terms of premise. Both rely on comedy. And both could have easily fallen into the sequel trap of just repeating the same jokes, same cliches, and same great moments from the first one, just doing them slightly worse in the second one. Kingsman: The Secret Circle does this multiple times. The like, oh, you liked it when Colin Firth was like, manners maketh man in the first one? Let's do the exact same setup again, except this time we'll make him miss with the glass. Do you like when Taron Egerton had sex in a controversial way in the first one? Let's repeat it the second time. Did you like the I'll let you fuck me up the ass joke the first time? Let's have Elton John say it this time, but we'll have him do it in a euphemistic way. It is so unsurprising and stupid and just less cool. And it just becomes less novel.
It's lazy.
It's so lazy. And this is what sequels do all the time, yeah. And maybe we should expect this. John Wick Chapter 2 took what was good about the first one, and it delivered a lot more, and it was a little bit bigger, and there was a little more action, and there was a little more excitement. But what they did was look for the little pockets of intrigue in the first one and said, how can we expand upon this?
Right.
So John Wick Chapter 1 is just a very straightforward shoot 'em up movie about a guy whose dog gets killed and he's out for revenge. And what you sort of see throughout it, and it's hinted at, it's never explicitly explored, is this idea of this larger world of hitmen. This larger world that is housed at this hotel that becomes sort of a iconic location in these movies, that is hinted at in the various other characters that John Wick runs into. But this larger underground that is present all throughout the globe of hitmen with a code. And this movie, the second one, explores that world a lot more and tells you more about that world. And it's just more interesting and more fulfilling of an experience. And it's great. I wish Kingsman did that.
And it had the opportunity to do it.
It did.
With The Statesman.
Right.
But
to give us some sort of different angle on it, you know?
But it's just, goddamn.
I mean, it's like Home Alone 2. It's like, well, rather than the guy with the shovel, let's put the pigeon lady in there. And rather than putting the burglars, let's have some idiots at a hotel.
I guess.
It's just plug in new thing to old plot line.
Home Alone 2 is actually good, though.
It is good. That's
true. The thing.
I don't want to sell
And it's Home not Alone 2 hours and 20 minutes long.
It's so long. We are living in the era of the long-ass movie. It's awful.
If maybe it had explored the statesman element in gone a little deeper with it, you know, added a few more facets to the whole, it might have been a little more interesting. I would have cared a little bit more about the whole operation that they were doing, but it's you know, it's shallower than what we got in the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
So,
one more thought, and then we'll move on.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to spend too much time just knocking a movie. That's not fun.
No, and I didn't like Julianne Moore very much.
I thought by default she was probably my favorite performance, but that's not saying much.
I didn't like it. It was annoying to me.
It was very annoying.
Oh, and the killing off of the Roxy character annoyed me too. I was like, what was that? I liked Roxy. I liked her a lot. What the fuck?
Yeah, they kind of just sold her short, didn't they?
I was like, oh, well, she's definitely going to come back at the end because it's just like that.
Right.
Usually in movies, when something happens that quickly, they come back somehow. I don't know how she's going to come back, but...
By the way, why is Colin Firth in this movie?
I don't know.
Why'd they bring him back? They didn't have to bring him back.
No.
Like, they just wasted a whole lot of time, like, just rehashing the same old shit with him.
In the biggest, like, cop-out way. Like, we got this device that'll heal the brain immediately. Like, no, that's not how it works. You can't heal the brain that quickly. Once it's damaged to that extent, it's fucking done. Good luck.
How about the idea that these statesmen that they have tracked down just happened to stumble upon Colin Firth, and they just happened to be holding him their captive?
Convenience again. We've talked about convenience. Oh, my God.
Yeah, you're right.
It's just the story, and, you know, coincidences just kind of happen in movies like this.
No, that's fine.
Any movie. That's fine. But again, I will agree that the way it happened, they just so happened to be in Kentucky right at the time that this big
2 minutes
shootout.
After, yes, they just get shot at the church.
And they didn't see Sam Jackson going away. It's just like, Sam Jackson leaves, they come in.
No, and it is fine to suspend disbelief, but if we're asking these questions, that means the movie is not doing a good enough job distracting us from those questions.
Yes.
Right? So it's because the movie sucks.
Here's the thing.
Go ahead.
It's comical, it's ridiculous, but I will say this. The movie, to a certain extent, certainly knows it's a little dumb and a little over the top.
Sure.
And I can't hate on the movie, honestly, for those reasons. It's fairly innocuous, which is great. And it's not pretentious. And
true. But Matthew Vaughn needs to move on.
Yes.
He needs to move on. He needs to do something else.
Yes.
And I don't know what that something else is. He can decide whatever he'd like. But I am done with him living. I do not want this guy, who is a very talented visual director, a very talented action director, living in Kingsman world for the next 10 years. No. I'm not into him doing Kingsman 3.
It's like, grow up, Matthew Vaughn.
Yeah, grow the fuck up, Matthew Vaughn. One final thought.
Yeah.
For some reason in 2017, cinema and Hollywood has been doing revisionist history on one fact, and I want to correct the record right here, right now. It's very important. I do not subscribe to this idea that John Denver's Take Me Home Country Road is one of the great pop songs of all time. I don't know why every movie feels the need to reference it.
I've been noticing that too. Where is that coming from?
What is that all about? Alien plays it. Alien Covenant,
I know
it was
in.
Logan Lucky, it's the emotional climax of the film involves that song. And in this one, the emotional climax of the film involves a character singing this song.
I know.
It's not that good.
I like it, but...
It's a fine country... It's probably by default one of my favorite country songs, because I hate country music.
Well, Johnny Cash technically qualifies as country.
He doesn't, in my opinion, but that's another argument for another day.
Yeah. It's like a Jaws argument.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. No, Take Me Home Country Road by John Denver is not that good. Let's stop pretending like that is the song that defines American
Nico,
culture.
You're going to upset all of our John Denver fans.
There's not... Which there are none of. Come at me, John Denver cult. Come at me. Anyway.
That'll be the one thing to bring us down. Of all the things to take down.
Hot take. John Denver's not that good.
Just that's it tomorrow. Just we're fucking done, Nico.
Yeah.
We're fucking done.
Okay. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Mother! That's how it's pronounced. Actually, in Bill Burr's voice. Mother! Okay. Mother.
This one, I've been sitting on this one for quite a long time.
Lowercase m.
Yeah.
Exclamation point.
Mm.
Mother. You saw Mother a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Okay. We have a lot to say about this.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be a great conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait for it.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Hall, talk to me about your theater-going experience seeing Mother. I want you to explain, set the scene, paint a verbal picture.
No, you say don't bang the table?
Don't bang the table. Don't bang the table.
I don't care.
Okay. Neither just Darren Aronofsky. Does not care what I think.
We'll get to that.
Okay.
I went to see this movie. Okay, this is actually pretty. I gotta set this up.
Yes.
Okay, so I was telling my brother about this, and I was like, "Oh, we gotta go see this weird movie that's is all controversial, and apparently it's crazy, and it's gonna be a lot of fun because I've been exposing my younger brother to a lot of odd films. I sat him down and he watched Eraserhead, and he's like, Adam, this is too weird for me, but you know, I admire it. I'm like, great. Okay. And he and I both adore The Neon Demon, which is another one. It's a good movie, Nico. You should watch it. And a few other just strange horror films along the way that he just really, really enjoys that I've kind of turned him on to. So I was like, oh, this is just another one of those movies, maybe. Before we go, my parents are like, you shouldn't go see this because it's bashing Christianity. It's bashing Christianity, apparently. And I'm just like, Mom, first of all, I don't care. Second, I mean, I'll decide that for myself after I see it, especially for what I know about Darren Aronofsky. I find that highly unlikely, but we'll see. Maybe you're right. Maybe he's changed his ways over the years because he's actually surprisingly spiritual. and we went to the theater, and there's a surprising amount of people in the theater. There was a few more than I thought there was going to be. I thought it was just going to be me and my younger brother, and that was it.
This was opening weekend, correct?
No, I think it was the week after, okay. Or at least a couple days after.
Because as we are all well aware, this has been a colossal flop for Paramount Pictures. They lost a lot of money on this thing. It's only made, I believe, $10 million so far on a $30 million budget.
That's not good.
Yes.
That's not good. Anyway, so there's like, I don't know, it's not the biggest, what the fuck? It's not the biggest screen in the theater that I was at, but you know, there's a decent amount of people there. There was like 35 people in the theater in a fairly small cinema. Anyway, the movie gets going, you know, and it's sort of trucking along. And it's at first, it's, you know, it feels like an Aronofsky film. It's slower than I thought it was going to be at first. It's kind of boring. I was like, this movie's I don't really care about much that's going on, but all right.
It is a bit slow.
Interesting. Interesting. Jennifer Lawrence is boring as hell, but okay.
Whoa!
And I'm still going.
Okay.
Javier Bardem's kind of entertaining.
He's having a good time.
I don't know why.
He's having fun, man.
The movie is like, okay, I'm like, this is kind of eh, but I'm in it still. And there are weird pockets of aggression in this film before we get to the third act. And I'm just like, whoa, what was that?
Sure.
And it happens very periodically. But still, I'm just like, okay, this is weird and it's tonally odd. And I don't really know how to feel, but okay, I'm still there. And don't worry, Aronofsky, I know exactly what you're saying in this movie, by the way. You're not being, you know, you...
You know, not as opaque as he thinks he's being.
Keep doing the metaphors, though. They're hilarious. Anyway.
Sure. and certainly a little highfalutin, but...
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway. And then we get to the last 25 minutes.
Which I don't even think it's that much. I think it's even a little shorter than that.
15 to 20 minutes.
The last 15 to 20 minutes, which, by the way, we will be discussing in explicit detail, so needless to say, spoiler alert.
I may have to use the bathroom before doing that, by the way.
No problem.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And this... and, I reacted in such a striking way for me. I've never had such a profound, all-over-the-place emotionally... experience in for any movie in quite a long time. The movie was not particularly clever or intelligent. Not in my opinion, Nico.
Okay.
And when it finally hits that you know last 15 minute mark, it just gets so ridiculous in such unbelievable ways that I was just left just dumbfounded by the end of it and confused and not really shocked, just I don't know.
However, full of laughter, according to your text messages.
Yes, it was. That's what I'm talking about. There were moments when I was shocked And then there were moments that I just found there were a few moments that I just found totally hilarious. Okay. And there was a jump in one part in particular. Sure. And you probably know what it is.
I have a good idea.
And first I'm like, holy fucking shit. That's the worst thing I've ever seen. And then the very next shot, I was laughing. I'm just out loud in the theater. Everybody can hear me.
Wait a minute.
I'm just like, what is this movie fucking?
What was the laughter came when? What next shot? Of the meat?
No.
Of the beating of Jennifer Lawrence?
No.
What next shot?
Of the people having a nice feast.
Got it.
That was so funny to me. For many reasons. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that in basically all the way through the movie, I'm just like, Aronofsky, I know what you're doing.
Right.
Can you be a little more on the nose?
Sure.
And the level of is pretentiousness is not a word, but maybe it is. I don't know.
I don't know if it's pretentious. I don't know if that's the word. I don't know if that's the word.
I would say it. Okay.
No, it's on the nose, certainly. Sure. And it's not very subtle. As you said before, the subtlety is totally lost in this. Let's put a pin on that in a second.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to say about the theater-going experience? What were the people around you reacting
to? They were just like, oh, okay.
Did they hate it? Did it seem like they hated it?
No.
Okay. Because if you are to believe what the public is saying... this has been one of the few movies to receive an F cinema score, whatever
the hell. I don't care about cinema
whatever score. Whatever the hell that
cinema
means.
Cinema score is fucking retarded.
Yeah, I mean, it's never been a good measurement of public consensus
you
anyway.
You form your actual opinion on a movie usually much more after the fact.
Right.
Anyway, so
right.
It's just bullshit to me.
Yes, but this has been decreed all over the internet as one of the worst movies of all time.
No.
Like, this has been universally hated and, or not, I shouldn't say universally
it's
hated.
It's polarizing.
It has been one of the most polarizing movies I can certainly remember.
Yeah.
But if those that hate this movie, hate this movie.
I don't go as far to say I hate this movie. I don't like it.
Okay.
That's about it.
Want to hear about my theater going experience?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Who'd you go with?
So, this afternoon.
Okay.
I went to see this movie.
Okay.
I had class.
Mm.
At 2:00.
Mm.
And I said to myself, Nico, because I talked to myself using the third person, Nico, you're an adult and you can make decisions for yourself. So if you don't want to go to class at 2:00, don't go to class. Go see Mother instead.
Okay.
So I grabbed my movie pass, which I purchased because I'm an adult.
Proud movie pass owner.
Absolutely. I left my college campus, a college campus that you were once an inhabitant of,
mm-hmm.
and I drove to the movie theater by myself, and I went to go see Mother by myself.
Oh, okay.
Okay? Because it's 2 in the afternoon on a Thursday. Nico's going to go see a movie. So I went and I got my ticket, and I drove and I went in the theater, and I took a seat, and... What I quickly realized is that your boy was the only one in the theater.
Oh, yeah, there you go. There you go.
I have never in my life seen a movie by myself before. I mean, I've gone to the movies by myself, but I try not to do that all that often. And if I do go with others, there are generally people also there. This is the first movie I ever saw in an empty theater by myself.
Okay.
And what a fucking movie for that to be.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. I had no one. So here's my experience watching this. This is a little creepy. The sound design is incredible. The creaking of the house is really freaking me out because I'm not sure if that's creaking of the floorboards or that's some troll that has been lurking in the back of this movie theater. I was terrified for the entire thing. It is one of the scariest movie going experiences.
What?
I have ever had in my life.
Oh my God.
I was freaked out. I was really freaked. I don't see a lot of horror movies. Being alone in the theater watching Mother was terrifying.
You consider this a horror movie?
No, I don't consider it a horror movie, but for me, this is a horrifying experience. So you have to understand, all of that is under one layer of Nico was in the theater by himself watching Mother.
All
right. On a Thursday afternoon. Now, I love this movie.
Why?
I love it. 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 Maybe I got to think about it a little bit more. Maybe I have to stew on it a little bit. Here's the thing. When people don't like things, and I get to be devil's advocate, yeah, and I get to like just push buttons and be like, oh, but sure, the group thinks this and everybody has agreed on this, but maybe like this way is the right way to think about things.
Oh.
I am a constant troll. I am always playing devil's advocate, and the backlash to this thing has made it so much easier to love. Okay. I think maybe I would have hated it otherwise. What is the problem with making an interesting, controversial movie that's pushing people's buttons? That's all I want out of cinema. All I want out of cinema is for us to disagree about things. I think it's great. I think it's wonderful. And for us to be like, let's do five more Kingsman movies and let's go, you know what's interesting social commentary? When Batman is a Lego. Like, fuck you, man. Like, let's get daring. Let's take some chances. Let's take Hollywood's sweetheart and abuse her for 2 hours on a screen. Because, like... like, it's boring to do otherwise. You know what I mean? Why do we want Jennifer Lawrence to keep playing Katniss for 20 years? Why do we want Darren Aronofsky making Oscar bait Noah's Ark movies or whatever the hell he's making these days?
I wouldn't call Darren Aronofsky Oscar bait even in the slightest.
Well, Black Swan is an Oscar movie. Maybe he's not Oscar bait.
Barely.
Well, it got nominated. It won Oscars.
It won Oscar for Best Actress.
Yes.
It's not an Oscar film, though.
All right, fine. But critically, Darren Aronofsky has sort of creeped into the mainstream over the last decade or so.
Yeah, sure.
Right. His last two movies have been smashing successes. Yeah. Noah, even if it's not critically successful, made a lot of money. This is what I want him doing. I want him pushing buttons, and I want him to get us to think a little bit. And yes, the symbolism was a little on the nose. Yes, it was a bit heavy-handed. Yes, you would have to be a fucking idiot not to understand what he was going for here. But there are still some provocative ideas and themes, which I am very excited to talk to you a little bit about because I have some interesting reads on it.
Here's the thing. But I don't think you can read this any other way except for one.
Okay.
That's why it was interesting, the critical reaction, when I heard people saying like, oh, well, you know, this movie is doing this, but, you know, I don't want to go too far into it because it's clearly saying like a lot of things. No, I don't think it's saying anything other than the one simple idea.
Which is?
In regards to oh, my God. This movie, to me at least, is only concerned with putting a mirror up to humanity by...
Isn't that what all...
By retelling the Bible.
Yes.
With various mixed metaphors. And that's about it. And
right.
I'm very confused why Aronofsky expects anyone to learn anything from this movie. I don't see the point in this movie. Okay. I don't see any point at all.
Okay. Allow me to theorize. Okay. Should we just dig right in now?
I don't think there's much to theorize.
Okay.
Really don't.
Allow me to theorize a little bit. So, yes, this is a very... heavy-handed biblical allegory.
Yeah.
This is and some people are saying, oh, this is about Mother Nature. This is an eco-friendly Al Gore.
It kind of is.
Kind of, not really.
He certainly has more sympathy for Mother Earth than God.
Sure.
But...
If you subscribe to the idea that Jennifer Lawrence is Mother Earth.
What do you think?
Well, let's think about it a little bit, shall we? So this the plot of the film, if you have not seen it, is that Javier Bardem is a struggling artist, is a poet,
mm-hmm,
and has been struggling to get his thoughts onto paper. Jennifer Lawrence is his wife. They live in a house together that they have been rebuilding since a fire.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Ed Harris and Michelle Pfeiffer show up, and they are our Adam and Eve characters,
mm-hmm,
very explicitly Adam and Eve characters.
Yep.
Everything from the forbidden fruit of the diamond in the bedroom to the literal taking out of a rib like that. Yep. I realized in hindsight, oh, yeah, that's right. That was Adam's rib there.
Yep.
And
then Cain and Abel.
And then Cain and Abel show up and Abel kills Cain.
Yep.
And I am no biblical scholar by any means. I haven't been to Sunday school in a very long time.
He's got the mark on his forehead.
Yes. But this was all very, very explicit, right? And this idea of this is what the Bible looks like if we're telling it exactly how it's written. and it looks really ugly.
Sure.
And maybe we want to reconsider exactly where we find our inspirations and things.
I didn't feel that at all, though.
Okay.
I felt like Darren Aronofsky believes in it quite dearly, and he's literally just interested in saying, guys, like, this is basically our history through, you know, what I believe, mm-hmm. and, you know, here's where we're going wrong.
So you believe this is a very pro-Christian movie?
Yeah. He's not anti-Christian. He's not.
Explain.
He's a spiritual guy. He's even said, like, yeah, I'm a spiritual
He also said something this week, though, that, like...
Or did he change his mind?
Well, he said that global warming deniers and science deniers are the reason why people don't like this.
Yeah.
Right.
But he's also very much pro, I love the Earth. Okay. Hence why the...
So why did he bring up science, then?
I don't know. You can be scientific and still appreciate God.
It's true. Okay.
Very much so. Okay. I believe he happens to be one of those people, but to a very more passionate extent. Like, he really loves the Earth.
Sure.
Really, hence the fountain. But I mean, hence the fountain. He also really likes, you know, the spiritual shit.
So, but part of the problem with Noah, I remember, was that Christians, there was a lot of backlash over that too, because he took a lot of liberties with the story of Noah's
Ark. He made it into basically a science fiction film.
Right. He put some stone monsters in there and said, like, yeah. And that was part because.
But he doesn't necessarily say this is bullshit, though. That's the thing.
Yes, but the critique was of him that he did not understand the story of Noah's Ark well enough.
Right. Yes.
So for someone that claims to be very spiritual.
He doesn't seem to understand the Bible very well either.
Okay.
In all honesty.
Okay.
And I've read quite a bit of the Bible.
So. Okay. That's okay.
I don't claim to be an expert, but
no, sir, yeah, you've certainly read more than me. I wouldn't doubt that. So you think this is just let's examine our history.
Let's examine our history and say, guys, we have fucked up so bad, and here's the timeline of how and why, essentially.
Who's God? Who's God?
The character in the movie?
Yes.
Javier Bardem.
Javier Bardem is God.
Yes.
So everything bad that happens, though, is the result of what Javier Bardem decides to do.
Yeah.
Right? He is the agent of pain and suffering for Mother Earth.
Sure.
And Jennifer Lawrence.
And I think here's the thing that I walked away from very quickly out of this movie, though, is that I think it's a very hateful movie. I think Darren Aronofsky believes in this wholeheartedly, and he hates everything for it. I think he hates God.
Okay.
He hates humanity. He hates himself, hence the struggling.
He certainly hates himself.
Yes. And the only thing he really sees any pureness in is the Mother Earth character, and he clearly believes that it's just being just raped.
Sure.
So that's where I'm at with this. And that's the thing. I've been trying to read this other ways, and no other way really makes any clear sense to me, or at least not as much sense as what Darren Aronofsky seems to be doing here.
So here's a few interesting thoughts.
Okay.
Because it doesn't – now, this could just simply be – I will be very open about this. This could just be Darren Aronofsky wrote this in 3 days, which he did.
5 days.
5 days.
5 days. Come on, Nico.
Okay, sorry. I don't want to sell him short. He spent a lot more time thinking about this material. This could just be he wrote this in 5 days and just didn't think these things through, and there's just holes. But there are certain holes that I find very interesting.
Yeah.
The idea that God and the Mother Earth character are lovers.
Yes.
This metaphor is extended beyond just biblical the biblical ramifications of this.
There are a lot of mixed metaphors in this movie too.
Mixed, but I think very interestingly mixed.
Yeah.
I appreciate the idea, as someone that is interested in actually the idea of Christianity in films, even though I'm not an overly religious person, I find it very interesting the way, and one of the reasons why I like Interstellar a little bit towards the end is the biblical stuff.
Sure.
And I think it just says a lot of interesting stuff about Christianity. The idea that God is in this movie, in this capacity, a romantic partner, and how your relationship with God is similar to that of a marriage or of a romantic relationship.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that you can ask a lot of him and not much in return, and what that leads to. I think that's an interesting idea.
Mm-hmm.
That a relationship with God requires maintenance. That a relationship with God is messy and is not as easy as I am just going to say a couple prayers and hope that you make everything okay for me. That it's complicated and is personal and is tough. I think that That is, wow, you're shaking your head.
See, here's my problem, is that everybody knows that.
I don't think yes, that's true. I don't think that's true.
Ask any Catholic. My dad, any Catholic, Nico, I do not care.
Yes.
My dad will go off.
Okay.
Oh, boy, will. My grandfather will go off.
Sure.
I think in Catholic guilt is a very real thing. I don't even want to sit down and talk with Martin Scorsese. He's like, how's your relationship with God, Scorsese?
And more importantly, how are you going to apply that to the new Joker reboot that you're working on?
Oh, God. My point is, I think people are very aware of God and the maintenance that is required and how much effort it is.
No, I don't think that's true.
And how...
I think particularly in Catholicism that's not true.
I disagree.
I think in
no. No.
Well, okay.
No.
I find that in Catholicism there's a lot less emphasis on the personal relationship and that it's a lot more about what
That's you... Protestantism. Not much emphasis there. It's just, you know, just believe and, you know, you can be casual about it, whereas...
Well, the idea, the difference... Please correct me if I'm wrong because I'm talking out of my ass in so many areas here. But the difference between Catholicism and Protestantism...
Is that Protestantism?
Protestantism? I don't know. Yes.
Whatever.
The difference between those two is that one is a organized religion that has essentially gatekeepers to God in either the Pope, the bishops, the priests, right? They are your connection. Your relationship with these men will ultimately bring you closer to God. Whereas if you're a Protestant, you believe that the relationship between you and God is direct.
Yeah. That's why it's more casual to me. You don't have to try as hard. You don't have to go to confession as a Protestant. You can just sit in your bed and be like, I'm sorry I did this. And then... That's it. That's all you have to do.
But one emphasizes a relationship with man and one emphasizes a relationship with God, though, ultimately.
And
one is a lot more ritualistic. I'm not making value judgment. I'm just saying one is a lot more ritualistic.
I would say one is more organized than the other, in all honesty.
Okay.
But still, to any, like, very devout Catholic, your relationship with those people is still a relationship to God.
Okay. However, the vast majority of Americans that consider themselves Christians do not put a lot of thought into that relationship, whatever that relationship may be.
At least in Connecticut.
At least us in Connecticut.
In Connecticut, us liberals.
Us liberal elites. Jesus Christ. So ultimately, this messiness there, I think, is an interesting way of thinking about it. And the equation... It could be a little offensive by some standards, but the equation between a marriage and a relationship with God is interesting. Number two, I find the crystal to be a very interesting plot device.
Yeah.
Because we ultimately have to think about what that is.
Okay.
We find out that this crystal that Javier Bardem puts on the shelf at the beginning of the film is what is keeping this house alive. This is revealed to be the heart of dead Jennifer Lawrence, right? The heart and soul of Mother Nature, all of her love, everything that she has is put in this diamond, and it keeps the house alive. It becomes the forbidden fruit.
Yes.
For Michelle Pfeiffer and Ed Harris's character, right? Is the apple on the tree with Eve, is the temptation. What's that mean?
What do you mean?
What's that? How can that be? How can that be?
The temptation?
Yes. Because in biblical terms, that forbidden fruit is a bad thing, is a symbol of sin, is a symbol of impurity. How can this thing that represents everything that is pure turn into something that is so evil and that sets this whole plot into motion?
Do you want to start picking apart the Bible?
No, I want to start picking apart this movie. And what I would suggest to you is that perhaps Jennifer Lawrence is not – this is an article that I'm stealing this, by the way, from an article that I read online.
Mm-hmm.
That Jennifer Lawrence is not the Mother Nature character, is not this symbol of purity and of nature, is rather the devil.
Okay.
And that that her destroyed relationship with God is the reason why humanity does what humanity does. And ultimately, if we are following that line of the book of Genesis, that forbidden fruit coming from her, I think is could be purposeful. I'm not 100% subscribing to this theory.
Forbidden fruit is not from the devil, though.
Okay.
Forbidden fruit is just is literally supposed to be just this perfect thing that's like basically humanity's not really worthy of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, guys, like this is for us. You don't touch it.
Okay.
And if you do, you're fucked.
Okay.
The temptation element does come from the devil. The devil is the thing that is tempting them to do it. That's where the snake comes in.
Right.
So by that logic, I would almost argue that maybe Javier Bardem is a little more devil-like because he's the one who introduces them to it and is like, oh my God, look at this beautiful thing that I've got. Mm-hmm. So you could argue that too.
Sure.
And then we get more into the like I said, the hateful elements of this movie where it's maybe it's just possible that Darren Aronofsky sees God and the devil as one and the same.
Perhaps, which is a very cynical worldview on it.
And I would totally believe it after seeing this movie.
Okay.
From him anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right here, we've just come to multiple readings of the text.
Sure.
Just like, no, but like this, now
all that are not very interesting to me, but fine. It's too, again, it's too obvious and on the nose, and it doesn't say anything new to me. I just don't care. It's like if you're gonna hold a mirror up to humanity, yeah, right? You have to at least do it in a way that is new to me and maybe make you show me something that makes me see ourselves in a way that maybe I didn't, you know, see it before. I didn't think about it that way. Challenge me.
Sure.
And the movie doesn't do that at all, especially coming from a cynic like myself. I'm just like, yeah, I get that. The only difference is that you hate people a lot more than I do, and that's saying something.
It is not that weird of a movie.
No.
I was expecting something that was really out there and experimental and stuff.
We'll talk about the last 15 minutes. It certainly gets there, but...
I don't know if it's weird. I mean, it's shocking and it's disturbing and it's gruesome. I wouldn't call it, like, bizarre, though.
It's tonally all over the place, and that's generally why when I talk about this with other people, I'm like, the movie on the whole is not weird, but that last 15 minutes is just... It's like a nightmare that you kind of like.
Yeah, no, I agree. No, I agree with you. Yeah. I agree with you. I found the experience to be very enjoyable. I did find this roller coaster to be very enjoyable, yeah, by the end of it. Here's the thing. Darren Aronofsky can direct a fucking movie.
This is his weakest film for me, honestly.
You think so?
Yeah.
You've seen The Fountain?
The Fountain is just like anyone who's interested in like art house cinema. That's just like porn to them.
Okay,
it's a little bit.
Because I've heard nothing but horrible things about The Fountain.
It's abstract.
Okay,
so, you know, I don't listen to people say it's horrible, and I'm like, what kind of movie is it? It's like, oh, it's this weird abstract thing. I was like, oh, okay, so I don't care.
Right.
I don't care what you have to say.
Yeah.
But yeah, no.
Not well versed in his filmography, so I
haven't seen all of his films.
Okay,
I actually haven't seen all of The Fountain anyway, too.
Okay,
but I've seen most of it.
Okay.
Hugh Jackman's in it.
Okay.
He turns into a tree.
Nice.
Basically, yeah, or plants or whatever.
I wish he stayed that way.
I like Hugh Jackman.
I'm sure you do.
I like Hugh Jackman.
Okay,
he's great in Wolverine. He's great in Prisoners, and he's great in. It's great, Les Miserables. I haven't seen Les Miserables.
You haven't seen Les Miserables?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh God, that's a rough one.
Oh, is it?
That's Tom Hooper, man. That's peak Tom Hooper.
I like a Tom Hooper film.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
You don't.
It's called The King's Speech.
You like The King's Speech?
Yes, I do.
It's not horrible. Did you see the Danish Girl?
No.
Okay. Tom Hooper, what a bore! What type of pretentious? What a bore and a half!
Yeah, I can see it.
Les Miserables. Russell Crowe is. I have never seen a guy whose bad performance destroyed a movie more in a supporting role. Like he should not. He is so horrible in that movie. It is shocking. Mm. It's surprising every time he's on screen.
Really?
Yeah. So yeah, I have not. I've only seen The Wrestler in Black Swan.
That's you haven't it. Seen Requiem for a Dream.
I've not seen Requiem for a Dream.
I like I told this to you. Requiem for a Dream, excuse me, is a movie that I think is really, really, really great, but I don't ever want to watch it again.
That's what I hear from everybody that's seen it. Yes.
Black Swan, I actually enjoy a bit more.
No, Black Swan is perfect.
Black Swan's
enjoyable.
A lot of fun.
Yeah, no, it's perfectly enjoyable.
And The Wrestler is just heartbreaking, and it's really good.
No, The Wrestler is beautiful.
Yes.
Also not one that you necessarily want to revisit that many times, but it's a beautiful movie.
Yes. But that's the thing. Those movies are quite beautiful, and I think the filmmaking in... I have a lot of mixed feelings on the general filmmaking in Mother.
Okay.
I think the use of I'm not a fan of close-ups. Mm-hmm. I'm actually a big critic of close-ups in films.
Okay.
I have never seen a film that was all close-ups and had it. It's never worked for me. I've seen movies that attempted to be almost universally close-ups and they just don't work.
Birdman?
Birdman does not have that many close-ups, though.
It's all close-ups.
No, it's not. About? It's almost all wides, dude.
Birdman is not all wides.
It's quite
about?
A bit of wides, yes.
It's following him around for the majority of it. Exactly. It's a lot of it in their face.
It's
Emma Stone, you get a big close-up.
It has close-ups, but it doesn't overuse them. And okay. It's predominantly wides. Okay. And that's more attributed just to the fact that most of it is not constantly, you know, cutting into a close-up. It's all seemingly one take, even though it's not.
Give me more examples.
Movies that are just overabundance of close-ups where it's damn the Devil's Rejects.
Never seen it.
Yeah, you wouldn't like it. Okay. It's a Rob Zombie film. It sucks. Ugh. And that's another one that used way too much. Oh, what the fuck was that movie? Jeff, He Who Lives at Home.
Okay. Haven't seen that either.
Okay. But I have seen movies where wides, where there weren't any close-ups in the movie. Zero close-ups, and they've been, like, perfect movies.
Okay.
So it just makes the film look dull and feel dull. It doesn't give me much of an experience. It transmits ideas quickly, but it doesn't – the ultimate experience is not very effective for me because I just think it's a very one-note element of filmmaking.
What it sometimes does to actors is it gives them sort of a free pass to do whatever the hell they want. Yes. When you always have the camera right on in their faces, they have a tendency to overact because actors love nothing more than a close up.
Yes.
Right? And wides, it asks a lot more of them sometimes. And
it's the little uses of close ups that I love. Like we talked about Arrival. One of my favorite shots in that movie is a close up, and it's of her dragging her hand across the spaceship.
Oh, my God. That's my favorite shot in the movie.
Beautiful.
Yes. Oh,
it's incredible.
God. It's tremendous.
It's just the amount of feeling in that shot. Mm-hmm. But there's a simplicity to it, and it just says so much at the same time. It's just a wonderful, wonderful thing to actually experience. Mm-hmm. And in this, it's Jennifer Lawrence trying to be soft-spoken.
Oh, stop it.
And trying to be nice. Stop. Can you get it out of my house? Can you not sit on that? Stop. Can you not sit on that?
Stop it.
Oh, it's so boring to watch.
Her?
Oh, my God. Wow. I have the first, how long is this movie?
It's 2 hours.
Okay, so it's just nonstop boredom for me for, like, the first hour. And that's predominantly due to the fact that the film seems like it needs to hold on the back of her head and her face through maybe like 75% of the movie.
It is.
That's a lot of the movie. And I get how you might want to use that to rack up tension or give the impression that this is so much her film. But
gives a sort of dream logic to it as well.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It does make it very explicit that what you're watching is not necessarily reality.
Yes. Yeah. I think there are better ways to do that. You know, we can ask David Lynch.
Well, we know that. We can ask David Lynch a lot of things.
Oh, I hope
And that would not be one of the first 20 things I ask David Lynch. I hope I get the chance to do that one day.
He probably wouldn't answer a single one of your questions.
I don't think so either.
Now, I would like to relate this to Darren Aronofsky too, but we'll get back to that.
Okay.
Actually, but yeah, no. The problem is thematically, that doesn't work for me.
Well, I was very impressed with his sense of place here.
Sure.
I think that's one of the if you're looking for an easy way to distinguish good directors from bad directors, how they shoot certain locations is a good rule of thumb.
It has a setting that does feel very real and lived in.
It does. It's the type of thing, and the tension of you get a sense exactly of the geography of that home, where each room is located, what the significance of each of those rooms is. When she's walking around corridors, you do kind of freak out because you're like, oh my God, she's going to go in the room with the baby's crib in it. Or, oh my God, now she's going in the basement because I know she's going to turn around that corner to get there. And the front door and the significance of the third level and the second level, that to me I always appreciate. It's one of the things that I appreciate about Hateful Eight so much. And Hateful Eight is not that good of a movie, but it is very well directed because Tarantino can shoot a fucking room, right?
Yeah.
And just get a sense of exactly what that room feels like. So in terms of Aronofsky as a horror director, that I appreciated.
Sure. Yeah. it does, and like I said, it does feel very believable. And you can, you know, like, I love this word, but it does feel quite palpable. And that's nice. I like it when the movie can make me feel something.
Yes.
And God forbid a movie makes me feel something.
God forbid.
Again, however, it's at the end of the day, I step back from it. I'm just like, okay.
Yeah.
So what?
This sounds like you were underwhelmed.
Yeah.
Not that you were offended, not that you were shocked or anything, but just like kind of underwhelmed, which was not your reaction when you first saw it.
Well, I was more coming off of the last 15 minutes, which we'll get to after I have my pee break.
Okay.
but we will get to that. But again, this movie is just, it's, I don't know, even with all of its, you know, attempts at, you know, telling its story metaphorically and the thematic implications, it's just dull for that first like hour and a half. It's not that exciting or interesting, and the performances are fine. Like, they're fine. I didn't like Ed Harris. I didn't like Michelle Pfeiffer. I found Javier Bardem annoying. And Jennifer Lawrence was the worst part of the movie, in my opinion.
Do you want to pee now, or do you want to argue about Jennifer Lawrence?
No, you can argue about it. It's fine.
I need to yell at you about this. What's the matter with you?
I like Jennifer Lawrence.
What's the matter with you?
Most of the time.
She's the worst part of the movie?
Yeah.
Okay. You're wrong.
Why?
That's fine. You're wrong.
Why am I wrong?
That's wrong. I find her face to be endlessly compelling.
It's not.
I really do. I'm sorry. I just do.
Okay.
I find her face to be very interesting. In the same way that I find Emma Stone's face to be very interesting. And I do not mean that they're two beautiful women. I mean that they are very expressive and just emote a lot of charisma. And I just love them both for that exact reason.
I get that from Emma Stone. And I get that from Jennifer Lawrence in Silver Linings Playbook. And that's really about it.
I also find, this is going to sound really weird and creepy, but just go with me on this. We're two weird and creepy guys. What do you want from us? I find Jennifer Lawrence's sexuality to be a little off-putting.
Okay.
In the sense that there are times when you find her very sexy on screen when you don't feel like you exactly should find her sexy on screen. Just sort of the way that when she walks around at the beginning of the movie and she has that nightgown on and you can just see, you get the outline of her body as she's looking for Javier Bardem at the beginning. I found her incredibly attractive then. Mm-hmm. And I, for some reason, thought to myself, I shouldn't find her incredibly attractive here.
All right.
And I that seemed intentional. Maybe it's not intentional, but there's something about her that's very innocent and very youthful and very young. And of course, that's the relationship with Javier Bardem is in itself.
That's how you see it?
A weird dynamic. Certainly. Oh, 100% certainly do. And I felt like my attraction to her was sort of a violation in many ways.
Okay. Because I didn't get that.
I didn't feel that same way.
Complete opposite, honestly.
Okay.
As far as my feelings on Jennifer Lawrence, too. Yeah.
Okay.
Because you know me, I don't care about American Hustle. So.
Why don't you care about American Hustle?
Well, it's partly because of Amy Adams.
What?
I don't like Amy Adams.
Amy Adams is great in that movie, though.
No, she's not.
Oh, she's so good.
Amy Adams plays Amy Adams, and that's about it.
That's not true.
Yes.
That's not true at all. That's simply not. No, I'm not a huge Amy Adams fan. I'm not a defender. Don't get me wrong.
Yep.
Even though she's kind of good in The Fighter, too.
Yeah, I like her in The Fighter.
Yeah.
I like her in The Fighter.
Lighten up on American Hustle, man. That's a fun-ass movie.
It's fun. No, I like it, but I don't, like, love it. Like people seem to really love that movie, and I just don't get it.
No, because people are always like, oh, it's just Goodfellas and with Christian Bale and Bradley Cooper.
Interesting. Okay.
And I'm like, yeah, it's Goodfellas with Christian Bale and Bradley Cooper. What's the problem?
Interesting.
That's all I want out of movies. I don't know what you're looking for. All
right.
Yeah, no, it's great. Also, one of the great Renner performances.
Yeah.
Renner's great in that.
Yeah. Yeah, he is.
And you know how much I love Jeremy Renner, and he's phenomenal in it.
And Louis C.K. We like Louis.
Louis's a lot of fun.
Louis's great in that.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a lot of fun. You haven't seen Wind River yet, have you?
No.
Okay. You don't have to.
Okay. Is Louis in Wind River?
No. Jeremy Renner is.
Yeah. All right.
He's good in it.
Okay.
Other than that, snoozer.
Okay.
My Lord, is that movie slow.
Really? There's been movies that you consider slow that I enjoy watching quite a bit.
This one's slow.
All right.
Yeah, this one's really slow.
I found this movie boring, so, you know, for the most part.
Okay. So everybody's mad about this last 15 minutes.
I'm not mad about it though. That's
everybody's a little on edge.
I don't know why they are though. I mean, I know why, but I don't know why they haven't put any thought into it, it seems.
It feels like if you do think about it, the more removed you become from this movie, the more it all sort of makes sense and is not as offensive as you think.
Yeah.
So go pee.
Okay.
And we'll come back and we'll talk about that last 15 minutes, shall we?
Yes.
Okay. And we're back. How was your pee?
It was a delightful experience.
I'm glad.
It felt, you know, I feel so great now.
I'm glad my bathroom.
I feel so happy.
Could provide that experience for you.
You know, Nico, I love Mother. I just love Mother. I love it so much.
What a turnaround.
Let me tell you why I love it so much.
All we had to do was empty the tank. Who would have thought? Man, oh man. It was that easy. Okay, let's talk about the third act, shall we?
Yeah.
Because everybody, again, is losing their fucking minds. Kristen Wiig's in this movie.
That's right, she is.
That's the big headline, right? That's what everybody's like, would like, go back to SNL.
She probably has like, I don't know, a minute of screen time.
Yeah.
So.
But milks it, though. I love Kristen Wiig in this. I think it's great.
You know what? I kind of do, too.
Yeah. So, our poet has...
He's written the New Testament. I'm not even going to be subtle about it. He's written the New Testament.
Right.
And everyone loves it.
Sure.
And everyone's flocking to him. Uh-huh. And he's like, you know, they've come to see me.
Uh-huh.
And they start, every, you know, hundreds of people start just, you know, jamming their asses into you know, Jennifer Lawrence's house.
Sure.
And she's very upset about that because she just wants time alone with Javier Bardem so that they can...
Get off the sink!
Get the fuck off that sink.
Yeah. It's not set yet.
I want to say that line. That line that dude says, you're an ignorant, but I feel like we'll get in trouble.
No, you can say cunt. No one's listening.
That's so,
come on.
Stop. I laughed my ass off when I heard, oh, it was so funny. You know what?
Certain offensive swear words can be hilarious.
I was like, where did that come from? It's like, you know what? Get out of my face. You're an ignorant cunt. It's like, what?
It's so, so aggressive.
I know.
It's like that. I love when things escalate quickly. My favorite thing is when conflicts escalate quickly. It's hilarious.
That's a little too quickly.
Oh, like, no, never.
Like the jump from here to fucking here.
Yes.
It just makes no sense.
Yes. I wish every character in every movie had Tourette's.
That's yes, how, me yes, too.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yes, that happens.
And, well, that saying the movie escalates quickly is an understatement. That doesn't even begin to describe the level of escalation that this movie goes through. Because... Right. Basically, people become so obsessed with this New Testament that they just start fucking, basically destroying the house and starting riots and arguments over, you know, the thing that this guy has written, to the point where the military comes in and blows the place to shit. And there's gunfire all over the place and people are fighting back and Kristen Wiig is executing people.
For no reason, really.
I was like, what? And essentially it's the apocalypse. The apocalypse more or less happens. And it looks like that. It looks very post-apocalyptic at a certain point. But we also forgot to mention that Jennifer Lawrence is in labor for all of this.
Correct.
All of this.
Yes, because she's been... Oh, yeah. Oh, Jennifer Lawrence gets pregnant.
Yeah, and it inspires fucking...
Because Michelle Pfeiffer's like, yo, have a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, regret having a kid. So so they have a kid.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, that leads to the inspiration to write, because Javier Bardem is suffering from writer's block through a lot of this, and, you know, sex, that's what does it. No, not sex, but the kid.
Sure.
The kid.
Right, of course.
But really, it's sex.
It's all about the kid.
It's sex. It's a sex thing.
God's a horn dog, man. Let me just tell
yes,
you.
Yes, he is. Yeah. Yes, he is.
Absolutely.
You want to, you know, expand?
Okay. No.
You want me to keep going?
No, I don't want you to. I'd like you to stop.
Okay, fine.
You want to talk about God's sexual preferences? Is that what you want to do? Is that what you're...
No, no. Oh. Like, talking about the fucking plot.
Oh, no, keep going. Yes, keep going. Oh, I thought you wanted to go on a tangent. No, keep going. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Anyway.
Don't want to kill your flow.
So all of a sudden the mayhem just sort of stops very randomly. It's like, okay, I guess it's done. And they take Jennifer Lawrence over to the writing room where, and they kind of store away, and God, you know, I keep saying God, Javier Bardem,
him
takes her and kind of stows her away there and whatnot. And, you know, she has the baby, and then the three wise men bring her gifts.
Right.
And then but she's also very mad at him for inviting all these people in, so she won't let him hold the baby after she's had it, right? Mm-hmm. It's a very violent birth scene, by the way. Like, I will say this about her performance. It's fucking, it looks painful.
Oh, she goes for it, man.
Holy shit.
No, Jennifer, that's part of the reason why I love the performance. Yeah. Maybe it's a little bit of like the Leo and the Revenant type thing, but this girl fucking commits, man. Yeah. She just let this crazy man abuse her for months and months while filming this thing. It's tough.
Yeah.
She goes for it. I get it.
Yeah. You know? That was good shit.
No, it was. That was good shit.
But anyway, she has the baby and she doesn't trust him. So she's like, I'm not letting you take my baby. I'm just going to hold it here. And he's like, give me my child. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't move. He basically just sits there, looks her dead in the face like a fucking psychopath, waiting for her to fall asleep so he can snatch that fucking baby out of her hands.
I love this scene.
This is a good scene.
I love this scene.
This is my favorite part of the movie.
When they're sitting in the room and they're having this standoff with each other, I loved it.
That was good shit.
Yeah.
That's my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah. The passage of time just felt so palpable, and he did a great job of that. Mm-hmm. And just the looks that they exchange with one another, he is ready to take this baby, but is not going to be violent, and is not, because he has a lot of love, this guy. He's full of love and compassion.
I knew the baby was going to die.
Okay.
I knew immediately as soon as she was pregnant. I was like, she's going to have the baby. That fucking baby's going to die. Okay. And that baby is somehow going to be Jesus-y.
I suspected it a little bit because I knew something bad was going to happen.
Yes.
Because I kept – that's the extra knowledge that I came into this movie with, of like something crazy is going to happen in the third act.
Yes. It's just a very – again, with how just hateful and cruel this movie is anyway, I was like, even if I didn't pick up on the biblical metaphors, which I would have been a fucking –
hard to do.
Would have been a retard not to.
Hey, don't insult some of our listeners. I'm sure many people were just like, why do these two hate each other so much?
Fuck you. Anyway.
Man, why'd the one brother kill the other one? I'm sure.
This makes no sense.
The Gleason brothers. Do you know they're brothers in real life?
Those were actual brothers?
Yeah. Well, Domhnall Gleason is the one brother.
Yeah. What was the other?
The other one's another Gleason.
Oh, I didn't know. I did not know that.
Evidently, there's another Gleason.
Wow.
Let me pull up his name.
Amazing.
Let's give him a shout out here. He is Brian Gleason.
Ah.
And he is one of the
sons of the great Brendan Gleeson.
Of the great Brendan Gleeson. Who's your favorite Gleeson?
I love Brendan. Come on.
In Bruges, is that why? In Bruges, I'll forever put him over the edge for you.
I love that. I love him as Mad Eye Moody, of course.
Have you seen Calvary?
No,
Calvary's really good.
Isn't that by Martin McDonagh's brother?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Brendan Gleeson's really good in it.
All right.
Yeah.
I should watch that.
There's one about Catholic guilt. Oh boy. If you want to hear more about Catholic guilt, yeah, Calvary.
Fucking Catholic guilt.
Absolutely.
They like that. They like that in movies.
They really do.
Particularly Silence. Have you seen Silence?
I haven't. My boss saw Silence, though, and he was telling me about it. And the way that he explained it to me was very interesting.
How did he explain it?
So he wasn't quite sure. He wasn't quite sure what Scorsese had to say about God and Catholicism, because evidently he was not exactly able to decipher if this was a cynical movie about faith or the opposite.
It's very critical of the people who pride themselves on faith.
Okay.
That's what the movie's about. Ultimately, what it has to say about faith, for me at least, is very touching. Mm-hmm. It's frustrating. It's a very frustrating movie, and it's long.
Sure.
Punishingly long.
Sure.
And almost to the film's detriment, almost. I like the movie. I've grown to really like the movie, but I could understand why you could watch it and be like, that was boring and repetitive as fuck.
Okay.
I think that's part of the point.
Okay.
But,
well, yeah. I mean, yeah, they're prisoners of war.
Yeah, but I mean, it's really long, and there's just lots of sit-down conversations, and they're not the camera work with those scenes is not very engaging, but again, it makes sense to a certain extent thematically of what the movie's about and what it's trying to say about Catholicism. But more importantly, the people who are, you know, so engraved in that religion. And the final shot of the movie is very, very powerful for me.
Cool.
For me personally, too.
I got to see it.
Yeah.
And I definitely have to. I don't know why I haven't seen it yet. Cool. Okay.
Very, very Kira Kurosawa, too. You can tell Scorsese's pulling from him quite a bit. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Yeah.
I've grown to really love it.
So there's this standoff.
Yeah.
And finally, Jennifer Lawrence falls asleep. Javier grabs the baby and begins whisking the child downstairs.
Look at this baby that I've got.
To the masses.
It starts pissing because it's scared.
It is very scared. Begins crowd surfing.
And then its neck gets broken.
Yeah. So when this happened, my jaw hit the floor.
Yeah.
I will admit.
Yeah.
Not necessarily because I didn't really see it coming per se.
I knew it was going to die. I didn't think it would happen that quickly and like that.
Yes. Yes. It is tough to say a baby getting its neck snapped is something that I can predict.
That fucked with me.
Yes.
That's what I'm talking about when I said that part really shocked me.
Right. That was like, holy shit. Because the way that they did it too was so real and brutal. And
it was so tough. Meaningless too.
Yes.
That's what did it for me. 100%. It just, boom, just dead. Like, mm-hmm. What?
Yep.
Terrible.
So that happens, and you're like, oh my God, now this movie's taking a turn. And then the feast.
They chop up the baby and they fucking eat it.
Yeah. So when that was happening, what were you thinking when that was happening?
I was laughing my ass off. This movie gave me pure, unadulterated shock and terror. And in a split second, I was gut-busting laughing. I couldn't help myself. It was so funny. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen.
That's a problem.
Yes.
That's probably a problem.
Partially with the movie, in my opinion.
Mm. You probably shouldn't be slapping your knee when a baby gets eaten.
No.
Probably not a thing.
And I don't think that was the intent. Here's the funny thing. I've heard some critics look at this movie and say, this is a very interesting black comedy.
There are funny parts.
Sure.
No. I find...
But yes. To me, it's not consistent enough to be considered a black comedy.
There are... When the guests start arriving in big bursts, mm-hmm. I found that hysterical. Like, when they were after the son had just been killed,
yep.
And they were all coming over for the funeral procession or whatever they were doing.
Let me paint your house for you. That was cool.
Yeah, no, I found that hysterical. And every time they just kept coming in more absurd ways, that was really, really funny for me.
But I should not have been laughing at these hundreds of people eating the dead baby.
Probably not.
I don't think I should have. And you know what I thought of walking out of that? I was like, that's a Monty Python sketch. I've seen that on Monty Python before, and I think that's because even in the way it quickly transitions to that is so Monty Python. I'm just like, Jesus Christ, Aronofsky.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think you knew what you were doing there.
So all you really need is about 10 minutes of thought afterwards, and you're like, oh, that's communion, that's sacrament. That's, you know, taking the blood of Christ.
And then we get to God saying, we have to forgive them.
Yes.
It's like, movie, go fuck yourself. Like, literally go straight to hell. I don't
literally.
Care.
in a giant explosion in the basement.
The fact that they took communion literally really bothers me, too, as someone who is, you know, I'm not religious, but I still have my faith. Mm-hmm. And coming from that, I'm just like, Aronofsky, I think you do believe this, and I think you really do love it, but you don't understand communion.
Sure. Mm.
You're not supposed to take it literally.
Yeah.
Jesus didn't even – the point of that is so that you appreciate Jesus and his sacrifice that he's making for us. That's the whole point of communion.
Right.
It's that so you remember why he lived and died.
Sure. That's not an obsessive, like, I want this in
me. No.
Exactly.
Not at all.
Sure. Right.
So I was just like, what the fuck is this?
No, they made these people seem like groupies at a Justin Bieber concert.
Yeah.
That's what they made Christians out to be in a way. Now I'm just sort of coming to, oh my God, maybe this was very anti-Christian. I don't know. Maybe I understand why that's the case. But it was this sort of obsessive cult-like treatment of Christianity was a bit much.
Yeah. But again, I don't really think it's so much against Christianity because it takes it all so seriously. Even the mm-hmm. God elements, it takes it very seriously. That's why I think it's just hateful of it.
Yeah.
It accepts it. It just thinks it's...
It's not mocking it.
No.
No, it's
no,
not.
No, exactly.
Yes. But it is very...
It's just angry at it.
It is very angry.
Yes.
It's very angry.
This is a, like, truly dark film in the sense that the filmmaker, when he was making this, was just in a bad place, and you can see that.
Mm-hmm. Certainly.
So
that happens.
Yeah.
Baby gets eaten. I was not laughing in the theater by myself.
I was.
I was a little freaked out. I believe I yelled.
But I also think it's just because at that point I already understood the intentions of the filmmaker, so it just took me right out of the movie.
Sure.
I'm just like, obviously you're doing this. And I just felt like he thought he was being so clever and intelligent.
Did you think so?
Yes. And I'm just like, what are you doing? Man, if you're trying to make that point, I should not be laughing at it.
Yeah.
I should not find that jump so fucking ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It should hit me in a very different way than it did.
Right. So immediately after that, they begin beating Jennifer Lawrence senselessly.
Yeah.
In horrible fashion. In a shot that I found to be incredibly powerful as well. I thought again, although a little much and although a bit over the top,
yep.
was maybe I'm giving it too much credit, but I think it says a lot about not only about how we treat Earth and our relationship to God and things like that, but also, rather purposeful or not, was about domestic violence, certainly, and was about our treatment of women and, again, how they are at one point sexual objects and then just sort of, you know.
I guess.
Right?
I think there were women beating her, too.
Maybe. So?
It's like, eh.
So?
Then that leads me to just think, like, okay, it's just, you know, people yelling, you know, getting mad at Earth when they should really be getting mad at God.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, I get it. It's like, dude, like, Darren, you got your point across like halfway through the movie.
Yes.
And that's, I guess that's part of the reason why this film just frustrated me so much, because it just felt like it was telling me the same thing on mm-hmm. loop.
Yeah.
And, I mean, maybe the ending of the film, maybe that was the point.
Sure.
I don't know. And the ending of the film is another thing, because to me, it kind of hit the nail in the coffin for me that I was like, no. Aronofsky believes in all of this, and this is just him saying, yep, it's always been like this and it's always going to be like this, and there's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah.
It wasn't a big, like you said, there was nothing really satirical about the end.
No.
He wasn't making fun of anything. It felt like his final clear point on everything.
Sure. It was aggressively just like, this is the Bible. Deal with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Misanthropic. I love that word. That's how I describe this movie.
Very, very good.
Misanthropic. Man.
Good. I'm glad you're getting the good use out of that word of the day calendar. I got you. It's nice to see you've been keeping up.
Fuck you. I got yelled at for using the word facetious the other day.
That's not that complicated.
I know.
It's not that highfalutin of a word.
I know. My friend was just like, "What? Stop using intelligent words."
No,
I was like,
you need smarter friends, clearly.
I love this person. She's great. But okay. I was like, that's not that obscure. She's like, what, you used that and tenacious the other day. I was like,
tenacious?
I was like, come on.
Jack Black has a band with the word tenacious in it. It can't be that pretentious. It's not being used at dinner parties that much. Like, come on. That's fairly mainstream.
I just love your subtle jab at Jack Black and
I would
stupidity.
Never. I would never. Okay. I would never. I love Tenacious
you
D
son
as
of a
much
bitch.
As... somebody out there, I'm sure. Not as much as
Dave Grohl
guy.
Plays the fucking devil. It's good shit.
Yes. anyway, I love this line in the movie. You loved how much I loved you. I love that line.
So do I.
Oh, thank God we agree on this. I thought you were going to bash Aronofsky again. I thought that was a tremendous line, and that really hit me a lot, and I've been thinking about it quite a bit. Again, the idea that our relationship with God is similar to that of a marriage, and the vicious cycle that you get into with marriages of when someone loves you so much and you just take all their love and don't even think to reciprocate.
That's the only part where the marriage themes really I felt like they actually meant something and was actually saying something fairly interesting. It's the part where the thematic implications of the marriage really showed themselves to me.
Yeah.
And
the parallels that they draw between the religious stuff and that.
That part worked.
Yeah. Great. I think that's great.
But then the house blows up and I'm like, okay, again, end of the world. Fine. I get it. And then he takes her heart out of her.
Sure.
And I'm just like, I was like, and the house is going to get built again
mm-hmm.
and another girl is going to come up. Right?
Right. Right.
I'm just like, so it's this terrible vicious cycle that we're just always going to be in. Fine. I didn't learn anything.
Wow.
I didn't learn a thing.
I guess the problem that we've run into, and I think in a way that we're kind of agreeing about this more than we're not agreeing on this,
yeah.
is those that actively hate it because either they don't understand it or they thought that it was meaningless dribble and dreck.
No, that's the mainstream idiots. I hate sounding like an elitist.
Yeah,
no, it's mainstream idiots.
No, it's true.
I don't care about them.
What's very fascinating to hear from you, and I'm starting to come around to this point of view as well, and I'm sure I'll get there in a couple days, is that it's not that interesting of a movie. And it's that thematically, it's not that interesting.
It's not clever. It's not, and I don't think it's intelligent. I actually think it's kind of stupid.
Wow.
I think, and that comes across when you, especially when you consider the fact that he wrote it in 5 days.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but ask anybody, even the people who like simplistic approaches, like, I don't know, like Richard Linklater is to a certain degree like simplistic shit. But 5 days and on a script is, it's very rare that you can write something that good and, you know, make it, you know, just this masterpiece.
Sure.
Very, very rare. Unless you're a genius, like, I don't know who did that.
Well, the Coen brothers did Bart and Fink in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's okay. There you go.
You know, they pounded that out. But even that is sort of similarly about the process of writing and the process of being an artist.
Yeah.
And you could sort of feel the aggression of writer's block. And
yeah.
Right, and you can really feel Aronofsky's aggression here. Yeah. At himself. That
the Coen brothers are also better filmmakers than Darren Aronofsky.
No question. We're not going to get into that debate today. But as much as you said, yes, he is very he has a love, mostly hate relationship with Christianity. He certainly has that rage directed at his own self.
Yeah.
He really I can't tell if he thinks he's a genius or he doesn't think he's a genius.
Have you seen interviews with him?
I have not.
You would love it.
Okay. I have not dug deep enough into him, his personality.
He's from Brooklyn.
Okay.
And he sounds like a Brooklyn guy. You would think he's this artsy motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
But when you hear him talk, it's like what? He's this pretentious asshole.
Okay.
And he does something, and this is why I wanted to bring it back to David Lynch.
Mm-hmm.
This is a point I've wanted to make for a long time, by the
Can't
way.
Can't wait.
There are plenty of filmmakers out there that I love quite a bit. However, I hate listening to them talk about their own work.
Most directors are like that.
Yes. I love Nicholas Winding Refn to death. Okay. You know this.
Sure.
I cannot sit down and listen to him talk about his movies.
He is.
And you know this. This is.
He's a handful.
And I think this is why you are so critical of him.
Oh, yeah.
I think his movies work wonders, and I think he should just let them speak for themselves.
Uh-huh.
That's what I believe. I know you don't quite agree with me, but I every time I watch his movies, I really do feel that. I just wish he would just shut up and be like, okay, yeah, just take it, just watch the movie, experience it. I don't really care how you think.
Right.
I wish Darren Aronofsky did that too.
Okay.
And one of the reasons why I like David Lynch so much is because he will actually tell people who ask him about his movies,
right,
go fuck yourself.
Yeah, go fuck yourself. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
And that's what you should do.
Yeah, we're not talking about that
with movies like this, because. Here's the thing.
He will go through hurdles, as a matter of fact, David Lynch, to not answer your questions.
Yes.
And to only confuse you more.
Yeah, exactly. The way he talks about his movies when he actually does sit down to kind of talk about it is confusing.
Yes.
But that's kind of the point.
And he'll get a bit adversarial with interviewers sometimes that don't know how to interview him. Some interviewers are very good at interviewing him.
Yeah.
Some just clearly are in over their heads when they talk to him. And whenever they ask him questions, like, oh, so who's your favorite character on Twin Peaks?
Yep.
And he'll go, all of them. I love them all. Next question.
Yeah. And here's another thing I'm talking about. Because I've seen him direct behind the scenes. And when you hear him direct, it's like, he sounds a little like some pretentious asshole to a certain extent.
Kind of. I've seen clips of this as well.
Like,
yes.
Inland Empire. Like, that's the closest thing you get to him actually explaining himself.
Mm-hmm.
And again, when he does that, it's like, I don't know if I buy into it. But then when you see the movie, it's a completely different story.
Sure.
And I just think, with movies like this, it is very hard to explain yourself in a cohesive way that really enlightens people. And I really wish filmmakers who make movies like this did not explain themselves, because it just makes the movie so much better when you don't.
Sure.
It's why I'm very interested to see how you're going to react to Eraserhead.
Okay. Yes.
I can't believe you have – Nico has not seen Eraserhead.
I have not seen Eraserhead. I know. And I've been obsessed with David Lynch over the last 3 months, and I have not.
I could see you watching and thinking it's slow.
Okay.
But we'll see. We'll see. I love it.
Okay. I have a feeling I'm not going to hate it, because I don't hate many things that David Lynch does.
No. Okay.
Which is weird for me, but I really love everything this man does. I think he's a genius.
You don't like The Straight Story.
That's not true.
I thought you said you didn't like it.
That's not. I don't think it's great, but I don't think it's. No, I don't. I do not like the story. Yeah, absolutely not.
I could have sworn I heard you say you didn't like. I don't know.
No. I mean, it's delightfully fine. It's a Disney movie.
It's weird because my two favorite Lynch films are like one that's his most mainstream and one that's his most not mainstream.
Yeah,
and it's Eraserhead and The Elephant Man.
Well, The Elephant Man is incredible.
I love The Elephant. But again, that's not like a Lynch film in the way that we know Lynch.
No, not at all. Yes. No, it's actually very straight. I mean, in a way, it proves that this guy can work in the studio system if he wanted to. Yeah. He just chooses not to, which I love about it even more.
It's great.
Yeah. I am, though, very interested in this whole backstory to Darren Aronofsky, because a lot of this was not just biblical, but inspired by his own relationship. And he was going through a divorce, right?
Yeah.
Who he was married to some actress before.
Rachel Weisz. Is that how
you think? I think it's Weiss. Yeah.
Weiss.
That's my half German side coming out.
Oh, good for you.
Rachel Weisz.
That's how
you say it, yeah.
Krankenhaus.
Rachel Weisz.
I only say Krankenhaus. I love that.
Krankenhaus. Okay, good. So he was just coming off a divorce with her, I believe, around the time that he wrote this script.
Yeah.
Was apologetic, certainly. I mean, that's where some of the relationship elements come into play. It's like, I fucked this up. You loved me so much, and I was not good enough, and I was not there. I was too obsessed with my craft. I was too obsessed with being adored by the masses for my brilliant art, by my New Testament poetry that I am writing.
Do you get it?
Yeah. No,
I understand. Do you get it?
Yeah. I get all of it, and and I'm sure that you do, too. And I appreciate that personal element to it. What I don't quite understand, and love is love, Adam. We don't want to pry too much into other people's relationships. What I find very strange is that after being directed by this man and after being beaten senselessly on screen and abused, everything short of rape is done to Jennifer Lawrence in this movie.
Yeah.
It is horrible. Just horrible, horrible things done to her on screen. You think like she would maybe not want to spend time with this guy. And if I'm looking for a potential lover, maybe all the warning signs are in the script of Mother. I don't know. Am I crazy?
No. I heard this and I was like, wait, what?
Yeah. So they're dating in real life.
Yeah.
Aronofsky and Jennifer.
Similar relationship because he's significantly older than she is.
Yes. No, 100%.
Yeah.
Which is weird. Again, it's like, dude, like he's trying to tell you something.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I don't know. I find that very strange.
I don't think that's going to last very long. But
no, I hope, for J-Law's sake, I hope not.
Who is she going to end up with in the end? Who do you think? Hugh Hefner? Oh, wait.
Oh, don't. Too soon.
I don't care.
You don't care about the Hef?
Nope.
Oh, we'll be talking about the Hef on Why Is This a Thing this week.
Sure. I mean, I was like, okay. I wasn't like heartbroken. I was like, that sucks, I guess.
It's my hero.
Good for you.
Who has a better life than Hugh Hefner?
I don't know.
There's nobody. There was nobody with a better life than him. The answer is nobody. Okay, the answer was nobody. Leo came pretty close, I think.
Oh, yeah.
At his peak, but he never got to Hefner level.
Or Kelly, man, come on.
Okay. What else do you have to say about Mother?
Go see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good advice. That's an important thought. Go Do see not it. Let that get overshadowed.
Yeah.
Go see it.
Yeah.
Because I think this is something that we should be talking about. And
at least it's better to be talking about this than most movies that are coming out.
You're right.
That have come out. Yes. Honestly.
You're 100% right.
Yeah.
As a contrarian, I love praising stuff like this. I love when movies stir the pot. I love when there's controversy, and I think that's wonderful. And I think that's pushing things forward. I don't think it's pushing things backward. Yes. So in that very specific instance, I really like Mother. I just do. Okay. I just really enjoyed myself, and I'm thinking about it.
Just one of those movies for you?
It just is. It just worked. It just, for some reason, it just hit me in a way that I did not think it would.
All right.
Because I was not expecting to like this. That was the other thing, too. You set my expectations so fucking low because you kept telling me I would hate it. You're just like, knowing you, you're going to hate it.
You might grow to hate it.
It's possible. Yeah. It's possible. But, you know, as I ruminate on it, I don't know. I think there are interesting themes at play, even if they are a bit obvious.
Yes. Because okay. I didn't hate it at first. And I don't really hate it now, but I just grew to be like, you know what? I just don't think it's any good.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at with this.
Sure. It's awesome that we're talking about it, though. And it's awesome that people are debating it, and it's awesome that there's something that can be divisive. Because it doesn't seem like these days there's enough culture that's divisive. It just doesn't seem like we're being challenged enough in our things. It's either Game of Thrones is amazing, or Logan Lucky is pretty good, or Batman versus Superman is bad. Yeah. And there's nothing that really divides us that much anymore in our
art. Unless it's politics.
Unless it's politics. Yeah, and everything that we shouldn't be divided on is what we're divided on. And our art, I think, we would be well served to argue about things every once in a while.
Sure.
And not necessarily kneeling at football games. Don't get me started on that.
Oh, I listened to it. Don't worry.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Yeah, I came across kind of angry.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, I felt kind of bad about that one afterwards.
I saw a little Darren Aronofsky in you.
Don't listen to the Nico show this week. I got too riled up. Yeah, that was.
That was funny.
Anyway, thank you, Adam Hall. This has been very fun.
Very cathartic for me.
Great.
Yeah.
I'm glad I could provide that for you.
Yeah.
As well as a place to pee.
Yes.
I'm glad you just get that all out of your system.
That was much more important to me than this.
All these toxins.
It's just that piss.
That's great. We'll be back. Ooh. Are we doing
know what we're doing.
That's next week, right?
Oh my god.
Blade Runner 2049.
Have you seen the early reactions for it?
I have. I don't believe early reactions.
I know.
I don't believe early reactions. I've had it with this shit. I've been burned way too many times on that.
Yeah.
Of everybody leaving the screenings like that was like.
Here's the one thing I'll say.
Transformative.
It is very long. It's 2 hours and 43 minutes.
Whoa, dude.
That's the one thing that as soon as I saw that, I was like,
Dude.
Okay. I mean, I love Blade Runner, but I wouldn't want to sit through Blade Runner, the first Blade Runner, if it was 2 hours and 43 minutes. That movie is not exactly well-paced. So thank God it's the length that it is. I hope Denis Villeneuve can make it a little more energetic.
I'm going to hate this movie.
It's 2 hours and 43 minutes.
I'm going to hate it. I'm going to hate it.
And I know you don't like it when movies get that long.
No, I hate long movies. Get me out of there in 80 minutes. I'm happy.
Okay.
I'm fine if ever. You know what? Honestly, you could be under an hour and I'd be totally happy. There's not one movie I can think of that could not have shaved off 20 minutes that came out in the last year.
Really?
Everything is too long.
Yes.
Everything's too long. There's nothing. The only one that was nice and short was Dunkirk, to be honest with you. That was the only one where I'm like, yeah, that was concise.
Yeah, it felt like 3 hours for fuck's sake.
Stop it.
Jesus Christ.
Okay, well, you're going to watch your nice, beautiful shots of outer space and clones for 3 hours and jerk off all over yourself. Man.
They're replicants, and they're basically the same as human beings. You don't understand. You don't understand the power and the beauty of humanity. I love Blade Runner so much.
I'm going to hate it.
Yeah.
I just know it now. I'm going to hate it. It's going to be something that everybody loves and everybody jerks off over themselves. Oh, Denis knows how to shoot neon colors. Fuck off.
Well.
Anyway.
Well, I think Roger Deakins, man. Come on.
Oh, Deakins is a cinematographer?
Yeah, dude. He's getting his Oscar. He's getting his Oscar. Whatever, it's happening.
Whatever you say. I'll be in my corner watching Lucky by myself.
I want to see Lucky, too.
I'll be in my corner watching David Lynch look for a turtle. That's my giant replicant.
I can't wait for Lucky, though. No, but the only issue is that I'm incredibly biased with this one, you know, because it's my most anticipated film of the year, and Blade Runner is one of my favorite films. But, it'll be interesting to talk about because I know I'm just going to be objectively biased with this, even with its unbelievably long length. I mean, 2 hours and 43 minutes, it is a little ridiculous, but we'll see.
I do not believe Lucky is playing in a theater near us anytime soon.
Shit.
So that's unfortunate. But I do want to see the Swan Song of Harry Dean Stanton.
Yeah, certainly.
That's getting great reviews too, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Let me just look really quickly. No. Okay. So we may have to wait on Lucky a little bit. Blade Runner 2049 will be our next movie hopping. Can't wait to be here. Same time, same place. And hopefully our witty banter will entertain all you people, you crazy psychos out there listening to us talk about babies getting eaten.
Fucking weirdos.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. Go away. Man, get a life.
Go to sleep or something.
At least listen to like Chris Hardwick or something. Why are you listening to us?
Go get high or drunk. I don't care.
I know. Fall in love.
Nah, don't do that.
Just ask Aronofsky. Adam, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
TooManyThoughtsMedia.com, TMT.media. Until next time. Happy movie hopping, people.
Happy movie hopping. Thank you.